Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the movie Mile 22. 2018, directed by Peter Berg, who also directed Spencer Confidential, Patriot's Day, Deepwater Horizon, Lone Survivor, and then Battleship, The Kingdom, Friday Night Lights, the movie, and Very Bad Things.
It's such a strange assortment of movies.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like the, you know, Spencer Confidential, that's also a Mark Wahlberg movie, right? Doesn't he play Spencer?
Oh, yeah, I think so. You're right. Then, I haven't seen it.
I think Patriot's Day, Deepwater Horizon, Lone Survivor, those are all of the same piece, kind of like this, right?
I haven't seen them. I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, I don't really know much about him. I know he makes decent movies. So, Brother Jay, it was my turn to I gave a list to you, and or actually I gave a list to you, and you came up with this instead of my list. Actually, well, no, there's no need to get into that. So, Brother Jay, this one's your pick.
Circuitously, it was my pick.
Yeah. So, what did you think of Mile 22, which you had never seen, right?
I'd never seen it before.
This is just kind of like throwing a dart at Netflix.
Yeah. I was watching it on the plane on my way back to Oregon at like 2 a.m. in the morning on what day? Tuesday? Monday night, Tuesday morning?
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions. This is a head scratcher of a movie, not because it's plot wise. I just don't understand, I guess. However, I will preface that with in post-watch research, it appears that it's going to be a trilogy of films, which makes far more sense to me.
Yeah, this seemed like an introduction, kind of.
It would have been nice to know that going into it, because then I wouldn't have been trying to pay so much attention. But I just kept expecting the movie was getting close to being over. I'm like, I'm missing something. I'm missing something. I'm missing something. Oh, I'm not missing anything. There's supposed to be two more parts.
This is a movie that if Drew hasn't seen it, Drew should.
Yeah, I imagine this is a lot of what Drew is up Drew's alley. It's action driven. There's a lot of action, not a lot of plot and not a lot of dialogue.
Yeah, which I mean, that's I'm not saying that that's Drew's type of movie right there, but he definitely likes Iko Uwais.
Okay. Yeah, I can't see his name.
Yeah, I can't either. I'm sure I pronounced that wrong. Yeah, but we know him from Stuber. Oh, and the Raid movies. He does an incredible action scenes.
Yeah, he does the same in this movie too.
Yeah,
there was a lot of good action in this movie. There was, and it looked good. It was a good looking movie. I thought
it looked good. It had a pretty good cast. Oh, come on. It had John Malkovich and John Malkovich's toupee.
Yeah, that was... And his accent.
Well, it wasn't too bad. It wasn't as bad as, like, Rounders or something.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't have anything against Mark Wahlberg.
I don't want to like him. I sense he's kind of a jerk in person.
Really?
Maybe not. But seems like, well, he has opinions. And he gets quoted saying stupid stuff, which maybe if I was famous, they quoted me, I would be
the I was going to say, I can probably pull some stupid quotes of yours, so.
Yes, you probably could. Yeah, off the internet. Yeah. So, yeah.
No, I'm equally guilty. I'm not saying I'm not.
Oh, no, of course,
totally, like, that's my wheelhouse, too. I like him fine. I won't go out of my way to watch a movie he's in, but I won't discount the movie just because he's in it.
Yeah. No, he's a compelling actor.
Yeah, he's fine.
Although he's sort of just doing his Mark Wahlberg shtick in this.
He's like a Tom Cruise light.
Well, yeah.
Like, I can't believe he's not Tom Cruise.
Yes. He can't believe he's not Tom Cruise.
Right.
But I think this movie is weird because
he's actually the low-fat store brand version of the real thing.
Yes. Yeah, who blinded an Asian man when he was a kid. But the Asian man forgave him, so we're okay. I shouldn't bring it up all the time. It's unfair.
Is this a real thing?
Yeah.
Or is this a joke?
No, this is a real
thing. This is something he did in real life?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Who of us hasn't? I mean,
well, come on. Exactly.
Cracking myself up.
Yeah, it's okay. Hey, somebody should. So, you know, this is a weird movie in that this would be Jason Bourne, except that, well, it wouldn't be Jason Bourne, it'd be more like Jack Ryan or whatever, except that Mark Wahlberg doesn't actually get to do much in this movie.
He barely does anything but shoot, and not all that well.
He shoots, and he's the crazy, like, the leader of the team on the ground, at least, but is a bit unhinged and does a lot of...
He's the unreliable narrator.
Well, and he's also doing a lot of monologuing.
Yeah.
But
he's master exposition with a gun.
Well, but if anything, like, the action hero in this movie is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And the rest of the team do a pretty good job.
To be fair, though, you don't know he's a bad guy.
Well,
necessarily on the outset. I mean, ostensibly,
that's the trick of the movie.
The movie, so we're just shitting on it already and spoiling it. But the premise of the movie is that you think he's a good guy, wanting to be a good guy, who is pushed into being a bad guy that wants to still come on the side of being good. And you know, that's, you kind of buy that for the, at least I bought it for like the first third of the movie, and then I was like, I didn't believe anything. So
yeah, exactly. Well, I didn't even know. I mean, I guess if you had stopped the movie three quarters of the way through and asked me how I think it would end, I don't think I would have been able to tell you that. However, when the twist happens or whatever, when the shock reveal, it was not all that shocking.
No, it was. Yeah, I agree. I was not shocked in any way. There was nothing. There was no sixth sense moment.
No. Although I'm interested to see. Did I think you had sent me, and I had the advantage you didn't, because you had said that this was going to be a trilogy before I even started watching it. So I kind of watched it with that lens. Is Lauren Cohen, the Alice Kirk character, has she been signed already? Is she appearing in the next movies?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that they made them because COVID put everything. Let me see. I hope so, because I like her.
Well, she's great, but. Didn't she die?
Well, it's unclear.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, I guess, yeah. Theoretically, the bad guy died too, but maybe not. Since that's the whole idea, is he's
well, I think
now going for revenge.
If he's alive, she's alive.
Yes.
I think that's the, you know, I'm struggling to get to.
That's okay.
IMDb. Oh, that's where. Oh, see, I knew she was familiar.
The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And also Batman v Superman. She was Martha Wayne.
Really? Huh.
I haven't seen
the movie, is no. So there is no untitled Mile 22 sequel in development. Hang on. There is nothing.
Okay, so it's not.
It has an entry, but there is.
Oh, okay. So the headline you sent me was that Wahlberg and Berg announced that they would be moving ahead with the Mile 22 as a trilogy of films, and then they cast Lauren Cohen in the film, in the first film.
Yeah, there is no... So there doesn't...
Okay. So who knows whether it'll be a trilogy or not?
No. It's not in his IMDb. Currently, he has post-production for Uncharted. Post-production for Stew, filming Arthur the King, and he's in pre-production of The $6 Billion Man.
Have you played Uncharted? the video game?
I don't think so.
Okay. Because I think Nathan Fillion is the voice of the guy in Uncharted, like the character that you play. So I think there was a little bit of internet outrage that he wasn't cast as the actor.
Oh. Ooh, that's not going to make the fanboys happy.
Well, I guess it just depends on whether they pull it off or not.
Oh, yeah, but that's not the juju you want to go into a movie with. Nathan Fillion followers are kind of fickle and... Anyway,
have you started watching Firefly yet?
No. No. I got back on Tuesday and tried to sleep and unpacked and went to work on Wednesday. And I'm trying to catch up on 4 weeks of work. So,
yeah, you've had a couple months.
I've done very little but work these last couple 3 days, which is why I kept thinking I would get. I was supposed to be off at 2:30 today, my local time, because it's my short Friday. And I just kept getting closer to 2 o'clock, and I thought, this is not. I'm not even close to getting done. I had 3 meetings and 4 interviews yesterday. I had 5 meetings today, and Wednesday I had 3 interviews and 4 meetings.
Nice.
It's been a very busy. On top of having to do my regular job, yeah. So. All of my friends at work are like, we're so glad you're back. I'm like, well, I'm aww. Glad to be back, kind of.
Yeah.
Like a little bit. Un poco.
No, so, I went back to work this week, too, and I was happy to be back, although I wasn't, I was training, I wasn't doing traditional work, but I was happy to be back, but, you know, I mean, it's not like I live to work, so.
Well, my boss's boss called me to check in, because we're all pretty close, yeah. We're all pretty tight. And I said, I was really happy to be back at work for all of about 30 seconds this morning.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
And then it just all went sideways. But no, I'm you know, I got plenty of stuff to keep me busy. So I guess the good news is my days go by like nothing. But
yeah.
The bad news is that I don't feel like I'm accomplishing anything. I just feel like I'm draining my bathtub with a thimble at this point. But anyway, mile 22.
Yeah, mile 22. We'll just dive in. This may be a short episode. Who knows? So, the film starts. By the way, this synopsis is from IMDb. I can just give that disclaimer up front. There's no name attached to it.
There's a really good synopsis on Wikipedia.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I usually look at IMDb first and Wikipedia second. But, yeah, anyway. So, the film starts with agents Alice Kerr, played by Lauren Cohen from Walking Dead and Batman v Superman, and William Douglas, Carlo Albin from Whippet and 21 Grams, arriving at a blue house on Christmas Street. They're part of a black ops group known as the Overwatch, or just Overwatch maybe, along with their partners Sam Snow, played by Ronda Rousey from Furious 7 and The Expendables 3, James Silva, played by Mark Wahlberg, all being monitored by Bishop, a.k.a. Mother, John Malkovich, which I think that's already wrong because Bishop is his code name, and I think his group is Mother, right? And the on the ground yes. team is like Child or Children or yes. whatever. Yeah.
Yep.
So, by the way, because of her MMA persona, I'm not a big Ronda Rousey fan. I mean, she was fine. I was going to say something snarky, but it's just no reason for it. She did fine. She held up her end of it. She wasn't given a lot of lines to work with. So there was no real test of that talent. And she certainly pulled off the physicality of the role. So that was good. So anyway, Alice and Douglas infiltrate the place, which is a safe house for Russian FSB agents. And the Overwatch team is trying to recover cesium they may be holding and prepping to use as weapons for terrorism. The two shoot and kill most of the agents in the house, but there's one hidden behind the walls, and he shoots Alice, wounding her. A young FSB agent, Anatole, played by David Gerlich, attempts to save the cesium, but he falls out the window, and Sylvia corners him and shoots him. The Overwatch agents then destroy the house. News of the operation hits fast, especially the, regarding Anatole's involvement. And that's pre-credit. That's the cold open. During the credits is actually, I like these kind of credits that gives you the master exposition in the credits. Because the credits, while the credits roll, it gives the history of this, of James Silva, the Wahlberg character.
Yeah.
which led me to believe he was going to be like the Superman in this movie or the main like badass. But he was just part of the team, which may be great.
Except that it makes it see to me that made it the movie about him, but yes. The team isn't about him.
Well, exactly. And the movie turned out to be more about the team.
Well, and all of the stuff that they seeded. That's a bad term. All of the media that they tried to push in your lap.
Yes.
At the beginning of this movie about him really didn't have a lot of relevance to the story. And there was a couple little things like the cosmetic thing with like the rubber band and his attention deficit or whatever. I'm like, but also that didn't add anything to the story.
No, not particularly.
I think it was supposed to be comedic relief, maybe.
Oh, I don't think so. I thought it was going to be like some sort of like, we'll explain his motivation when later in the movie his rubber band breaks and he loses his shit and kills a bunch of people or something.
Or he strangles somebody to death with the rubber band.
Yeah, something.
It seemed like it was written for a different movie.
Hey, they leaned on it a little hard for what you got.
Yeah.
Because you're right, it didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know.
And it basically took away time. I mean, this movie was an hour and a half. They could have made it longer. It took away time from everybody else and didn't really give you any more of his background that helped you. Nothing that they gave in that exposition really, really gained you any advantage to knowing him in the rest of the movie.
Except that it gives you his bona fides for being there in the first place. It explains like why it gives shorthand of why he's in charge of the one section of this group.
Except that doesn't explain why everybody else is there. They're
because the movie's
equally qualified.
Well, theoretically, yeah.
So I mean,
although some of the characters you don't really want to get to know because you're not going to see them in the second movie.
Well,
yeah.
Footage, flashbacks, you never know.
Oh, maybe, yeah. There you go. Oh, yeah. They could be both prequels. Or they could do a Star Wars thing and do the first movie, the prequel, and then the third movie.
By the way, I completely missed the meaning of the title, so didn't get it at all until now. I just got it now.
Mile 22?
Yeah.
Okay, what is the meaning? I mean, other than they had 22 miles to go, was there...
That was it. They had to give him 22 miles to the airport.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't get that till just now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, it's dumb. It could have been, it's one of those like 16 blocks or 21 bridges or something. It's like,
Well, you know, in this movie budgeted about $60 million. It made about $66
million. $60 million for this movie?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, a lot of splody. It looked good. Mark Wahlberg doesn't come cheap, and I imagine I'm not going to say his name doesn't come cheap. Iko Uwais.
Yeah. Well, I hope not.
Yeah. And John Malkovich definitely doesn't come cheap.
Cheaper than he used to, I bet.
And Lauren Cohen.
But John Malkovich could have done his role. It could have shot his role in a day for sure.
Probably did.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing is that now I have a different standard. I mean, for $60 million, Tyler Perry could have made 6 movies and 3 TV shows, the entire, like, 6 seasons of each.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. And have them completed within the month.
You know, the more I think about Tyler Perry, the more genius I think he is.
I don't know about genius, but he is very impressive.
I don't know. He may not have, the comedy saps that really make me grin, but he's accomplished a great deal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, and the com. I mean, we're just going to turn this into the Madea cast. But, when I first said in a very, very white guy way that his movies maybe weren't for me, which is why I hadn't really sought them out, that was what I thought. And when I watched the movies, I realized, oh, no, that's not it at all. His movies aren't like... that. They're not like, they give you, it is primarily done by black actors, and I assume there's lots of people of color in the crew and whatnot, and a lot of different viewpoints. But that's not for me. God knows. But
yeah.
It's sort of like Porky's. Like Porky's may be a great movie for its kind of movie, but at my stage of life, it's not necessarily, that movie is not really for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
at a certain point just in time, that kind of
like the Clumps, Meet the Clumps is not for me either.
Well, and I think at a certain point in time, that's funny. And then you move past it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I don't, you know, some, I don't like some of that kind of humor.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Or I've seen enough of it that it just doesn't tickle me anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. This movie is more for me. Now, is it as successful as the Dollar Barry movie? I don't know. I don't think so. I didn't have as much fun watching this movie as I had did Madea's Big Happy Family. But anyway, so we've got, again, Alice and, Alice and William, who I think they call Douglas, because that's his last name. They're the guys who pretend to be husband and wife through the door. And Mark Wahlberg is the guy who's like overseeing them from the backyard and calling it into mother. But it turns out he's the leader of this group, at least on the ground. And after this whole job on the safe house and the fact that this is all a black ops group, then we go to Indycar City 16 months later. Now, is there really an Indycar City in Indonesia?
No, it's made up.
Okay, I thought so.
It's a fictional country. Indycar is a fictional country loosely based on Indonesia.
Okay, yeah. Because Iko Uwais is, I think he's Indonesian. Because the Raid movies, I think, are Indonesian. Anyway, by the way, I would highly recommend the Raid movies over this. So, Overwatch is in Indonesia, and they're still hunting for the cesium. And Alice says she has a source of information on them, while Silva is all a hothead toward his teammates' actions considering how urgent the matter is. So Silva takes on the task of speaking to a walk-in who needs help because the government wants to seize her assets, while Alice has to talk to her ex-husband Lucas, played by the director Peter Berg, who she hates because he's not letting her see her daughter. And I don't know if that app is like a real thing. But it's pretty funny. They have, like, I forget what it's called, like Family Circle or something. Where
was it, like Family Wizard or something?
Oh, yeah, Family Wizard. There you go. Yeah. Where she, it flags any kind of bad language. It scans
if you swear or, yeah.
And then saves a copy for the lawyers.
Yeah.
So.
It seems a little bit of entrapment is what that seems like.
Well, you know. Relationships. That's why never get divorced. Never get divorced. Not if you have kids. So
never get married. Problem solved.
Yeah, there you go. So a local police officer named Lee Newer, played by Iko Uwais, who I was, again, I laughed, said he was from Stuber, which he was in Stuber, but really he was very impressive in The Raid and The Raid 2. He arrives at the U.S. Embassy to surrender himself along with a disc that he claims contains the information Overwatch needs to find the other cesium houses. However, Lee requests that he be escorted out of the country and given asylum in the U.S. to, in order to give them the code to unlock the disc. And the disc is like set to self-destruct in 8 hours.
So, just to interrupt.
Yes.
Our Family Wizard is a real thing.
Nice.
Our Family Wizard, all of your co-parenting communication on a single platform with OFW, Our Family Wizard, your schedule, expenses, and communication are contained within one app, so you can solve shared custody challenges faster and without confusion. That means less conflict and more energy to focus on your children. Powerful tools document your parenting time, reimbursement requests, payments, exchanges, and more.
Oh, I can't wait to ask some of my friends if they have heard of Our Family Wizard.
I know. It's apparently there's an iOS app, and I'm sure there's an Android app, and shareable with co-parents, children, family members, and practitioners. So I wonder if there was a kickback to this movie for the use of the program.
Probably. I hope so.
Yeah. For family law practitioners.
Oh, yeah.
Is it limited to just co-parenting communication? Attorneys, mediators, and other family law professionals are using it, are using practitioner accounts to better manage client relationships.
Nice. So you have to co-parent your clients.
Well, I think it's more you're monitoring your clients who are co-parenting in the midst of legal proceedings.
It's kind of, or maybe you're monitoring like two halves of a mediation. Like you only like you have to talk to each other, but only through this app. That's it's exciting.
I mean, it's interesting. It's a good use of technology.
Yeah.
I mean, it sure beats.
It's insidious. But I mean, right now you just take screenshots of all the bullshit drunken emails that you get or text messages, right?
Yeah, but this is easy.
Yeah, exactly. This just saves it for you.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me unless you go through our family wizard.
Ourfamilywizard.com.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll become a sponsor.
Hey, there you go. What if we talk to the parents via our family wizard? It would be great.
Well, I'm sure that would improve communications.
Yeah, it needs to be a document. Anyway, okay. So, elsewhere, a group of Russian agents led by Vera Kurigin, played by Natasha Grubskaya, are monitoring Lee's whereabouts, and they are seemingly planning to have him killed within the next 24 hours. They are in, like, the super Russian version of the AWACS intelligence jet that flies overhead and collects all this data. By the way, this whole thing, this whole movie is kind of like, it'll be sort of an enemy of the state, probably snapshot of what we thought tomorrow's intelligence would look like in 2018, because it's all, this whole thing is based on being able to take, like, hijack webcams and monitor, you know, like change traffic lights and stuff through the internet. And, The mother group is intentionally in a whole different country than the children group are operating out of, and because it's all like off the books.
Well, the movie makes the point that they all have to resign.
Yeah. Well, because they're State Department employees.
Not employees. Right? Yeah.
So
also, can we just talk about, I can't ever hear mother and not think of sneakers.
Of course. Yeah.
Like it just, that spawned a thought.
Okay. Well, but we got to capture it.
I'm
go to our family wizard for our thoughts. Our family thoughts. by the way, the movie has some like iconography or whatever. That's probably the wrong word. And a lot of their code names are like Bishop, and like there's a Rook, and there's a Knight, and there's a couple other things in the mother team. Like, why wouldn't the mother team just be called the King and the other team called the Pawns or something, or the Rook or the Knights?
Well, pawns are sacrificial, so I don't know that.
So maybe it would be like a knight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But anyway. So
there's lots of there's
it's bad branding, that's the problem. Like there's nothing chess related in this. Like I thought chess was gonna be important too, because doesn't he play chess? Like don't they kind of drop maybe even in the opening credits that Silva plays chess?
I don't know.
Maybe not. I don't know. Or maybe it's another movie I've seen this week, because I've seen quite a bit of movies lately. Anyway.
Also, Bishop, also sneakers.
Yes, yeah, oh yeah. So, Lee is brought into the medical room for testing, and a male named Axel...
Wait, sorry. Brought into...
Yeah.
Right?
What did I say?
Okay. Brought into... It's just you mangled it all together, and I was like... Okay.
Oh, we're going to have elocution lessons today. Okay. All right there.
My brain stopped for a moment because I
was
like,
here we go.
He was brought in.
So the Dylan brought Lee into the medical room so they can do some tests on him. And so while the Indocarian representative is saying, hey, you've got a criminal that we want, you need to turn him over. And they're like, well, we don't have a criminal, and if we did, certainly wouldn't turn him over.
Also, you're really high level to come for a really low level criminal.
Well, that's the whole point. It's like,
yeah.
Why are you here if he's just a low level person? And then there's the I guess Axel is probably the equivalent of Silva on the other side. He's the other side's action hero.
That's what I assumed. Yeah.
And he's from Olympus Has Fallen, Machete Kills, and Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. Although he's been in a lot of action movies and small roles.
He looked very familiar.
Yeah. So he arrives with Indonesian intelligence, and they demand that Lee be handed over. But the ambassador, Dorothy Brady, who's played by Purna Yaganathan, doesn't take them, doesn't let them take him, does not allow them to take the guy. While Lee is being checked in the medical room, since they've done brought Lee to the medical room, he's attacked by these two agents disguised as doctors. And they have, again, a very raid-like fight. Like, whoever did the fight choreography, it was great. A lot of flipping, a lot of moving. I
have to interject. This is a much more effective use of a hospital bed part than conspiracy theory.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, this has, what, 25 years on that.
Yeah, still. Yeah. It's better technique.
Yes. Yeah, he didn't have to go bouncing down the stairs making jokes. Instead, he was fairly serious during the whole thing. But yeah, very, like I said, very, very good fight choreography. Liked it a lot. So then Silva and his team, along with other separate operatives, proceed to escort Lee to an airstrip that's 22 miles away. So basically, that's the mission. They've got, and they only have like, what, half an hour or something to take Lee the 22 miles through a very, very, very busy Indonesian city, or sorry, Indukarian city. and they're presumably going to be followed by government things, or maybe just a whole bunch of like ninja guys on bicycles, or the equivalent, like gun ninjas. So they got to go 22 miles in like not very long, because basically the aircraft that's going to take them out of the country is going to land, can be on the ground for 10 minutes, and then wheels up. They're off.
Because I don't think they're supposed to be in the airspace. It's exactly. A big, yeah.
Yeah. So,
dun, dun, dun. So there's where your attention comes.
Exactly. So yeah, so now there's a ticking clock. So now they have to go. So it's going to be sort of a chase film, because as soon as they leave the embassy, they get intercepted by gangs on motorcycles and the other government forces. And they have to go by road, and they have a fight in the streets, and then they go into like a gigantic apartment complex and fight in the apartment complex, back out onto the streets. They manage to get cars along the way. I don't understand how that worked, but oh well. Maybe OnStar.
Yeah, I think the implication was that they were able to access the vehicles using their remote systems.
Yeah,
because most of those cars have remote controls that are able to be bypassed, yeah, or utilized via like my phone. Sure. I can use my phone to start my vehicle. So.
Oh yeah. No, you're right. It's like I said, the OnStar or equivalent.
Yeah.
We'll be like, oh yeah, let's stop the car. We'll unlock it for you. You get in, and then we'll unlock it, and you can go about your business.
Yeah. Just do that.
So it's basically yada yadding most of the rest of this movie. Along the way, Ronda Rousey doesn't make it. Also Douglas doesn't make it. So it's basically just going to be Mark Wahlberg, the character Alice, and so it's, what is it, Silva, and then Alice, and then Neuer, who's the guy that's being like the guy with all the information that's being smuggled out. But of course, in order to get the information, they have to get him out. So that's his thing. He won't give it out because theoretically he is a dead man if he stays in Dakar. Pew, 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 run, 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 kaboom. All the while, the Russians, who, by the way, are speaking Russian and are not subtitled at all, which I thought was actually kind of a cool move.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah.
Because it's incidental.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And basically, you don't really know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah, it would spoil everything.
Exactly. So, yeah. I mean, you know that, like, Bishop and his crew are doing all this, but the Russians are also monitoring all this, too.
Yeah.
And we don't quite know why. Yeah. So, Mark Wahlberg's team really are the pawns, though.
Yeah.
And actually, Overwatch is really just an organization that's disposable. Like, they are the black ops group, but,
well, by design,
yeah. There's complete deniability. So, you know, something goes wrong, poof. That's not, we got nothing. These are just they were a
private contractor,
private company that works off like out of Florida, that hired some Colombians to go into Haiti. We don't know what was going on. Our government wouldn't be involved in that in any way.
What would be improper about that?
No, exactly. It wouldn't be our government. It wouldn't be anybody else's government. It's just a bunch of guys who were probably a little bit... They got caught up in the, you know, all of a sudden there's a march on the Capitol.
I was just going to say, they were at the Capitol and they got this rousing reception and they got so patriotic they decided to take it to other countries.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So here's where the twist happens. But also, first of all, I've got some questions here even before we get to the end. The question is, first of all, is Alice, I mean, Alice is tough. We know that. And Alice, I guess, pretends to be a weak woman when it serves her, but she really is tough as nails. And she will gut you. And smile while doing it.
Yeah.
But is she good at her job otherwise? And she's also apparently not a good mom.
I don't know that she's good at her job, but I don't know that she's bad at it either. It's hard to know.
Well, she's good at the action.
Because you don't get any background. You don't get to see any other action.
Well, she vouches for this guy for Newer.
Yeah, so she doesn't do that part good.
Yeah,
she didn't vet him.
I mean, as we know.
Yeah,
but there's nothing to justify. Like, I thought there was going to be some sort of romantic thing between she and Newer.
She would use that to lure him, you mean? Or just there was something that's why she was trusting him?
It happens.
Newer lure.
Maybe they had a legitimate romantic relationship. Like, they were giving each other knowing looks or something. Or she was embarrassed because he was playing by weird rules after they developed this relationship. Who knows? Again, I was putting way more thought into the story than they were. So, they finally get to the airport, right? They drive all 22 miles, and they just, at the nick of time, they deliver Newer to the plane.
Well, they make the plane stop.
Yeah. Nail-biting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they make the plane stop. The plane stops. By the way, that plane would have just fucking blown right past them.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way. They say, sorry, we planned for this. This is called Contingency 2.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the plane stops, and as they're packing Newer up to the plane, and Alice is going to go onto the plane too, because not only is she wounded, but she gets some time off to go to her daughter's birthday or Mother's Day or whatever it is, Christmas. I don't remember what it was. Or maybe it was Mother's Day.
I think it was Mother's Day, supposedly.
So Silva says, you know, take 10 days or whatever, and she's like, I'll be back in 9. And she goes onto the plane and Newer at the end of it. And of course, you know, Silva is like, I don't know what your deal is, dude, but now we got you to where we need you. So give us the code. So he gives the code and they upload the code. They again, the ticking time bomb thing. They open up the hard drive that has the location of all the cesium, theoretically. And then he says, say hello to your mother. And walks onto the plane, and Silva's like, say hello to your mother. What the fuck is that? Like, I'm going to blind you like you're an Asian man. Wait, you are an Asian man. Anyway.
Wow.
So he's like, what does that mean? What an asshole. And that's when we find out, because when they unlock the hard drive, there's apparently locations of something, but who knows if that's true or not. But there's also... a picture of the young kid who was killed during the safe house raid in the cold open.
Oops.
And that apparently is the son of the Russian lady who is apparently some sort of like big wig.
High party leader.
Yes. So they're like, and at the same time, Bishop's group, the mother team, is attacked and everybody's shot. Most of them killed, although Bishop manages to survive. But they basically just completely take out Overwatch. And then you hear like that maybe Newer breached the cockpit of the plane. Like you hear radio chatter about that. So I presume that the plane had crashed. But the end of it, because this movie is actually kind of told, the whole thing is kind of a flashback because...
Well, it's a debrief.
So because Silva's being debriefed in the beginning, And he's talking about, you know, that A, they didn't know their communications were compromised.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the rest of it is just, you know, hey, that's what happens. You get collateral damage, right? So at the end of it, you know, there was this picture of the Russian guy who was killed, and this was the payback for that. So turns out he wasn't Neuer wasn't like a double agent; he was a triple agent. So yeah, it's I don't know. That seems sort of lame, but
yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
so
the question is now. So now theoretically, I mean, I guess the end. He puts what Neuer's picture on the wall or on his computer screen or something, and the idea is he's going to take revenge on Neuer. But that would only apply if Neuer's alive.
Well, I assume Neuer was alive. I assume Neuer also has Alice, and that's going to be the central theme to the second movie.
Exactly,
it'll be a hostage rescue movie. But I also don't.
The end of Hannibal.
Did you? Yeah. Did you get the impression that Mother wasn't really dead?
Oh, no. Yeah. I think Mother survived.
Yeah. I think so, too.
So it's basically just Mother and Silva.
Uh-huh.
Or actually, sorry, Bishop and Silva. The rest of, because, again, I think Mother is the whole group. But, yeah.
Right.
Interchangeable. Yeah. So
he's listed in Wikipedia as his name is James Bishop, quote, Mother.
Oh, okay. Wait, his name is James Bishop?
Yes.
But a lot of the other actors are named after chess pieces.
Are they?
Yeah, I mean, I mean
they're pseudonyms.
They're code names.
Or they're code names.
I mean, this could all be,
his code name is Mother, Child 1, Child 2, Child 3. Yeah, so they were all children, Child 5.
Huh.
So, yeah.
Anyway.
So Bishop Mother, the only reason it was Bishop is because that was his actual name.
Okay. All right, so there was
the actual name. Well, that was articulate of me.
Well, it's okay. It's hey, what can you do? It's a janitor, dude, burning all bed. Take him into get a little clinic, and so put some rubber dust on it.
Okay.
So, thoughts on Mile 22? Do you want to see Mile 23?
I would be interested to see it just so that I could make more sense of this movie. I would watch it.
Yeah, I would watch it too. I don't think this is I think this is actually a fine like $15 million movie.
This is like
it's not a great $60 million movie though. Like I'm glad I didn't watch this in the theater. Although it would have probably been a good time because of the action scenes. So,
oh yeah, there was lots of splody. It looked good. I mean,
it did.
It was a good looking movie, and there was lots of action that looked good. I mean, and the movie, it was not a slow movie.
Oh no, it was just over an hour and a half, right? And it clipped along. Yeah.
There was no fat in this movie. It was very lean.
This could be the pilot to the TV show.
Uh huh.
I mean, that's how it kind of felt.
I could easily see that happening.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so you said you'd give it like a C?
Somewhere in the neighborhood of a C, maybe a C+. I mean,
yeah, I think I'd go for that C+, maybe.
I don't know that it's good enough to be a B movie because it didn't give me the itch to like go back and watch it again.
Oh no, I don't think I'll ever watch it again. But I will. Yeah. I will watch the next movie though. I mean, I do want to see Mile 22 or Mile 23 or whatever it's called. Mile 22-2.
22-2.
I don't know.
22 Twain.
Yeah.
Kilometer
84. Whatever.
I was trying for some kilometer jump.
Yeah, I can't do either. I can't do
parsec.
It's probably like 50.
Math is hard.
Also, metric system. I blame how we were raised. Yeah. So Mile 22. I said, I had a fine time watching it. It kept my interest all the way through, but it is completely disposable.
Yeah. If you have access to watch it for free and you have an hour and a half that you want to kill, this will do it.
Absolutely.
It's fine.
Yeah.
There's no shame in this movie. You know, it's not like watching an hour and a half of something that you just absolutely want to just. Yeah.
Well, and it's, you know, if you're just in the mood for an action movie, this is right up there. Fills the bill for sure.
This would be like a 12-year-old's kind of movie fun.
Yeah. 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 You know what? Interesting, professional wrestling or MMA on TV, this would be an adequate substitute.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I have a question because I haven't seen The Raid. So okay. How much of like the movie, how much of the scenes in the movie that were like the building combat and fighting, how much of that is resemblance of The Raid?
The inside the building combat, not so much.
Okay.
Because the initial raid takes place in a building. Okay, so this movie has six times the plot as The Raid and The Raid 2. But it has maybe a quarter of the action. The Raid movies are all about the action. It is nonstop action, and it's really enjoyable. Don't get me wrong. It was super enjoyable. And there is some there's some other plot things to it, but it's kind of secondary to the crazy amount of action. But The Raid does some things this movie doesn't do, though. This movie was pretty good about following the action and all the flipping and jumping and improvised weapons and stuff. But The Raid was really skillful when it came to fight choreography because the camera did things like go through walls and go through the cars and stuff. So it was like they were like 99% fighting movies. And this is more like a 50% fighting movie, 50% thriller.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So if you're going strictly by, but you want to see a good martial arts movie, yeah. Raid 2, go for that for sure.
Good to know.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, what else? So here's, I guess maybe this is going on to housekeeping already. So one of the things I watched during my, I guess puppy sitting is the best way to describe what I was doing the last couple weeks. I watched all three Fear Street movies on Netflix.
So, I don't even know what those are.
Fear Street is a series of books. I think they're actually like young adult books or even kids books written by R.L. Stein, kind of like kids horror.
Okay.
And I've never read any of those books. They're popular, so who knows? But they decided to make three movies that all tied together. And they're all like legitimate movie length. The first one is Fear Street 1994. And it gives you that whole Stranger Things, but in 94. And then the second movie is in 78. So it gives you all the Stranger Things except in 78. So like they've got a ton of music and a ton of cultural references and costume and all the sorts of stuff that just puts you at that time in a really nice way. And then there's 1666, which I couldn't tell you whether the music was accurate. they did put on some accents in 1666 that I don't know if there would be, who knows? I don't know if they were necessary, but the 1666 one spends about three quarters of the time in 1666 and then goes back to 1994 to kind of close the loop on the story, because the story is about this town that is actually two towns, but started as one town, and there was like witch trials or something in the 1600s, blah, blah, blah. There's this whole lore behind it. Although it's funny because a lot of the thing is like a lesbian romance between these two teenage girls, which I thought was actually handled really well. But there's, there's all sorts of funny things. Like one of the funniest parts of it, and it's no spoilers, but one of the things about this movie is that it's like some monster ghosty bad guys come after somebody. They kind of go by smell. So at the very, very end, when they do all their like their Scooby-Doo meets Home Alone tricks to try to end the curse, the girl, the one of the main girls, ends up spraying herself with CK1 to mask her scent, which is, for 1994, it's hilarious. And so her little brother looks at her and says, "You smell like an androgynous baby," which I thought was very funny. So if anybody remembers CK1,
I know of pretty it. Smelly. I've never smelled it.
It was meant for either a male or a woman, but it's pretty strong smell. I mean, not like patchouli, but just very distinctive. Anyway, so I actually enjoyed all of those. That was fun. They were like sort of, because it's not a 70s, 80s movie, it's not like lots of nudity or anything, but there was like a fair amount of violence. And as kind of a teenage horror movie, it's all three of them are pretty good. So I recommend that. So I can see how this sort of thing would, you know, if they launched all these things like 2 weeks apart, Mile 22, Mile 23, Mile 24, that would be interesting. I mean, it was kind of a stunt because obviously they filmed just the actors who play the characters in 1994. Most of them have similar characters in 78 and then similar characters in 1666 played by all the same actors. So you've got all the same actors playing these.
I kind of dig that.
Yeah, no, again, they shot all these movies at the same time, and yeah. It's pretty great. Like I said, I think they succeeded in what they were trying to do, and they certainly got me to watch all three movies.
That's a nice gimmick.
So, yeah. And actually, here, to finish my housekeeping, I guess, in the media studies at least, I read or listened to two audiobooks. One is called Taking Shape, and it's this guy who it's like 11 hours of going through all of the Halloween movies, John Carpenter's Halloween and Michael Myers. And so goes through every single one of the movies, like the production of the movie, the critical reaction of the movie, a couple of mentions of like alternate scripts that were, you know, they were alternate ideas. And there was some rights issues. So there was some production decisions that were made that were kind of out of the hands of the John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, I think his girlfriend at the time who co-wrote everything. Anyway, so it's very rich history of all these movies. Some of them are very bad, by the way. I really recognize that, but it goes through from the original Halloween in 78, it goes all the way through, 2018's Halloween that was, you know, just in the theater, that assumes that that nothing happened after Halloween the original movie, like it just skips all of like the 10 movies in between. Wow. Or 8 movies or whatever. Then after listening to that, I listened to Taking Shape 2, which is a 23-hour audiobook about all of the alternate scripts for every single movie.
Wow.
Like, it goes through, and he actually has, he didn't do the interviews. Actually, I think he's like reading the interviews from Fangoria magazine and other kind of publications at the time, but he takes you through all of, that he touched a little bit on in the first book. He takes you through like every single, alternate script he could find and the writers of the script, because there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes, and it's a weird thing. I don't know if it still happens, probably not, because I don't know if they do novelization so much, but you know, so Halloween was written as a screenplay, right? John Carpenter wrote it and Deborah Hill wrote it as a screenplay. And then they hired an author to then write the novelization of it to come out at the same time. And of course, the novelization to fill the word count of a book, there's a bunch of backstory that's created from the novelization. And so a lot of times the next script in line will maybe take part of the novelization history and fold it into the canon of the whole lore or whatever. So the first couple novelizations, if I remember correctly, at least the first one, was actually pretty rich. It explained a lot of stuff that wasn't in the movie that actually kind of added to it. And then the novelization, because I remember reading the novelization of Halloween 3, which, by the way, has nothing to do with Michael Myers, but it was a great book, a great movie, and the book was wonderful because I was too young to actually watch the movie at the time, and we didn't have cable, so that was how I got like the horror movie fix there. And
was Halloween 3 the one where like the costumes were all possessed and stuff like
that? Yeah, the masks had pieces of Stonehenge in them, and spoiler, it turned your kid's head into bugs. But presumably at the end of the movie, the whole world dies. And that was my introduction to, I love it when everyone dies at the end of a book story. it tickled me so much as like probably a preteen or very young teen that I was like, yes. But so that novelization, of course, all the writers who write the novelizations are writing under pen names. Because it sort of worked for hire. So it turns out Halloween 3 and then a couple other novelizations were written by Dennis Etchison, who has his own novels, but he also writes screenplays and stuff. And he's a quality writer. So it was very interesting. So I listened to like 35 hours of audiobook about the Halloween franchise, which is my least favorite of the slasher franchises. But yeah, so that's my deep dive into movies. I think I may have mentioned this to Drew, but maybe not on the podcast. I part of the Audible Plus membership. I know I talked to you about this before, how it turns out I really like shopping for audiobooks more than even buying them. So I like the Audible Plus catalog where you have all these like thousands and thousands of books you can just listen to just as part of your membership. And one of them I listened to, it was called Human Sacrifices, and it was written by a British musician / writer who, I wish I knew his name offhand, but he talks about like ritual sacrifices in history.
Okay.
And he's kind of pro. Like he's trying to suggest that, you know, I don't know. There's just a lot of implication that, oh yeah, well maybe these people, you know, they were really truly just you know, exercising their religious beliefs. You know, maybe we shouldn't be too critical of the fact that they killed humans. Like, okay, yeah, I'm sorry, that's a line too far. But it was pretty fascinating, so I like.
Yeah, I understand the people of the time of the Salem witch trials are paranoid about magic and witches, but that doesn't justify them murdering people who were innocent.
Oh, he's talking about a lot more modern stuff too.
No, I don't doubt it, but the point remains like.
Oh yeah, no.
Once you start, it's hard to justify exactly. Murder,
yeah, killing people. Yeah. It's pretty hard to justify that.
Yeah, that's a hard cliff to come back from.
It's kind of like the, some of it, of course. Like lots of good nonfiction books, the book is as much about the author as it is about the subject, because otherwise it's pretty dry, you know. So he talks about how, you know, as he was a struggling musician, struggling writer, you know, kind of living hand to mouth, but also getting a job at a bookstore where he got to read all of these like Aleister Crowley books and stuff. So he got really involved in like reading about the occult, which is kind of how he gets all this, you know, to the whole ritual thing. It's kind of, it leads naturally. Also he comes off as one of those like sophomore college student guys who, you know, get really interested in like, Aleister Crowley and magic with the CK and, really believe in like, Satanism, not as worshiping Satan. They're quick to tell you it's not about worshiping Satan. It's about how you should just live your life because God isn't real, blah, blah, blah. Which, again, right. I don't want to
Or God's the one that kills babies and puts plagues and floods. And
no, actually, I think again, I don't want to be one of those guys either. But I think the idea of Satanism is, first of all, the name is just to fuck with people. And secondly, it's all about how, you know, they're just, if you can lead a moral life without being threatened by a magic guy in the sky. Yeah.
True story.
Yeah. However, of course, like people like Anton LaVey he was a legitimate like magician, like showman, like carnival barker kind of guy who put on a good show. But, you know, that was it. I mean, he dressed up like a weekend midnight movie host Dracula. And then you've got Aleister Crowley, who's basically involved in, you know, it's like a sex cult. Like he used he cultivated this image as the most evil man in the world, or the living embodiment of evil. Basically so he could have sex with boys and girls and everyone. Well, men and women, not children, I don't think, but
let's make a distinction there.
Yeah. Well, but there's a lot of like, you know, you hear some, like last podcast on the left, Henry Zebrowski specifically talks a lot about like things like the right hand path and like sex magic and stuff. And it's like, okay, come on. Like, you know, because I don't believe in anything. It's like, just come on, people. Like you can't say it's amusing to me when people say, well, I reject Christianity because it's a bunch of bullshit. However, I believe if you write your desire on a piece of paper and then ejaculate onto it, that desire will come true. That doesn't seem like that's no more. That is 100% as bonkers as anything else. So, you know, I mean, you might as well. I mean, it's The Secret plus Pornhub. That's what that is. I digress.
Well,
yeah. Anyway, so that was took off into a weird tangent. But you never thought we'd talk about Tyler Perry and sex magic in the same episode, did you, listeners? Did you? Didn't think so. Well, hello.
That would be because Jesse just got home.
Oh, okay.
The dog is racing down the stairs.
Maui is so lonely without Kaya being here because Kaya, the puppy, is off in puppy boot camp. You know, obviously taking care of the puppy was a labor of love, but it was a labor that we're happy to be rid of for a week or so. But yeah, I mean, as soon as Kaya gets back and we're allowed to, we're going to take Maui to go visit because Maui hasn't like eaten as like regularly since and has been like moping around and stuff. So, yeah.
Sad.
Yeah. But it forced the cats and the, because now the cats and the dogs all live in the same place. Like we kind of segregated them before because the dog would go attack the cats and stuff. But now the cats and the dog are like, yeah, we all been through this Kaya thing together. So, yes, Maui will still chase the cats and try to put their heads in his mouth and stuff in a friendly way, but not in a creepy way. Though. Yeah, well, not in the way they like. However, now, you know, because Kaya kind of broke the cats in as far as because Kaya just wanted to, like, lick the cats' heads and the cats were happy with that. So, oh, well, it all works out.
Well, that's something.
Yeah, because Maui was not a snuggling with the cats kind of dog. At least maybe now, though.
Yeah, well, if you need solace, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. The life of a dog.
Well, he's eating a piece of yak cheese, just thinking about memories of what used to be.
We're almost through a week of boot camp, so
yeah.
1 week closer.
Yep. Yep. Hopefully it'll be good. I'm sure it'll be fine because the dog's a smart dog and definitely trainable. So.
So when my last few days with the parents, we got them through the second season of For All Mankind.
Oh, nice. So, and you recommend it?
I've now seen it 4 times. Of course, I recommend it. Drew's watching it. It's excellent.
Cool.
If you watch it, we can discuss it. It's really good.
Yeah, I'll have to watch it.
And it's going to have at least another season, probably more like 5 or 6 seasons, but it's really good. And they're only 10 episodes per season, but they're long episodes because it's Apple. So,
yeah. Well, finally, by the way, my streaming services, you know, the free periods are coming to the end or the prepaid periods are coming to the end. And I am like so close to dropping Disney, except we've got like 15 more Marvel movies to watch. But we don't watch anything else on Disney. I mean, there's nothing. HBO is actually much more justified.
Plan or something. I have a family plan.
Maybe. Yeah, I may hit you up for that.
Because it's cheaper for me because I bundled everything with Apple.
Oh, okay.
So because I have 2 terabytes of storage for all my stuff. And then I have Apple Music and then I have Disney Plus. And so it's all bundled. So I think I have a family plan somewhere.
Okay. Well,
so I'm going to better write it down because I will not remember when I leave this room.
Yeah, because I will literally just use it for Marvel movies.
Well, that's pretty much all. Well, I mean, like, that's pretty much all I've been using it for.
I mean, Journey watched Hamilton, but that was about it. She's not really interested in that either.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, I'll take a look. But as I was with the parents, because they have TV, they have satellite TV.
Yeah.
Dish. And I don't have that at home. I don't have any service. I could have service. I just choose not to. I don't watch TV enough. So
we're on the edge of cutting the cord there.
There's nothing. There's, with the exception of a couple news events.
I watch like news debates. And I watch like Kelly watches a lot of, like HGTV, TLC, that kind of stuff, which all is available streaming through services, but it's also available for free or through prepaid, like Food Network. We watch a ton of Food Network because it's the one channel we can all agree on. Because Kelly want to watch like my 600-pound pimple popper, and you know, and I'll want to watch Rachel Maddow, and so neither of us enjoy the other's choices. So we're satisfied watching TV Land or Food Network.
Gotcha.
But also like live sporting events and news, and like I watched the opening ceremonies though streaming for free because I have the cable account though.
But for me, if I need something, if I want to watch something, if it's not available, most of the time YouTube will stream news like debates and mm-hmm. the speeches and stuff, or C-SPAN. So
and Hulu does it like the next day for most stuff, right?
And so I don't have anything in my life that's so important. And if it's news, super news, I'll get it on my phone.
Yeah. If it were just me, I would just have the internet.
Yeah. So, but being as that is what exists, of course, being at the parents' house for a couple, 3 weeks, I'm subjected to all kinds of different media that I'm not used to consuming.
Probably all kinds of. Probably 100% more judge shows than you're used to watching.
Yeah. And like 500% more home remodeling, flipping real estate things.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm not complaining. It's
My Tiny House Hunters.
I don't think I had that one. I just had these weird people.
That's an amalgamation of
awful design choices and trying to sell houses to people that are stupid enough to buy these houses that are so specialized they'll never be able to resell them.
Also, a lot of that is fake. A lot of those houses are not for sale. Just like the Say Yes to the Dress shows. Where they go and they model dresses and the bride picks the dress depending on whether the in-laws like it or how much it costs or whatever. Yeah, they cast the bride and groom and all the bridesmaids.
Yeah. Well, yeah. My point is that almost all of this reality TV is scripted.
Yeah.
And the reason that I bring this up is because inexplicably, as I was reading the local Portland independent newspaper was discussing that there's going to be a second season of Jim Belushi's Pot Farm reality show because he had a first season.
I was going to say, that's news to me.
Yeah. Well, it was only 3 episodes, I believe. Huh. But so we watched, I think we watched 3 episodes. I really don't remember because it seemed like 5 million years long. But it was so obviously scripted and he's trying to act it as if he's not scripted. And it was just so ham-handed and awful. But the bigger thing that I really kind of – that irked me out of it was that Jim Belushi is selling pot in Oregon. He's selling stuff that's exclusive in Oregon, like a Blues Brothers brand.
Right? Oh, yeah. It's all about branding.
Which is – so you're going to cash in on something – anyway, it was so bad. It's scripted so bad and just made me unhappy. Regardless, yeah, there's inexplicably going to be a second season. So,
wait, Dan Aykroyd's part of this?
Well, he
shenanigans
of this script. I'm sure this was all scripted. Jim Belushi had to have the drama of going and getting permission from Dan Aykroyd to use the Blues Brothers as a brand. Oh,
yes, okay.
And then Dan Aykroyd wasn't on board, and then he was on board, but there were stipulations, and there was drama. It's just ridiculous. Anyway.
Are they going to release like a strain called Crystal Skull?
I don't know.
Okay.
Probably. I put so little effort into retaining any of it. I was done, but, And then there's all the Dune stuff is coming out. All the trailers for Dune are coming out, and the fanboys are losing their shit because they've changed a couple of the characters. And I don't know if you've heard all that controversy.
I have not. It's time to you know, it's time to reload my Bene Gesserit song.
So, okay. I'm a big Dune fan. There's no shock to anybody, right?
We know that.
I've read the books, most of them. Most of the original books I've read. I've seen the movies in the series.
Yes.
And they're all different, and they have different characters and interpretations, and fine. All of that's fine. I don't have any problem with any of that, because they're all different versions. They're an artist's
interpretation. The main character has six names. You can have all the different versions you want.
Yeah, so in the universe that is being created right now, they changed one of the main characters, Paul's concubine, Chaney.
Okay.
Chaney's dad was Liette, or yes. Dr. Kynes.
Uh-huh.
Well, Dr. Kynes, Liette, is a woman now in the movie.
Okay.
So I don't know how they're going to work that in. Fine, okay, that's a choice, whatever. Yeah. So but all the fanboys are just like, you know, they've changed it. This is all changed and different and blah, blah. I'm like, you know what? This is an artist's interpretation. Go with it.
Exactly.
It could be great. It could be fantastic. You don't know what else they've written. And they're trying to set this up to be an arc of a story. So maybe there's more to it than you think.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, also, in a book that's about having golems, and reincarnated beasts from machines that turn into humans, you know, you have to maybe sometimes go with the fantastical and just let it go. So,
well, doesn't Moadib become a sandworm?
Well, he does not.
Oh, okay.
His son does.
Oh, okay. Of course.
Yeah, and Leto becomes a giant sandworm and lives for like a million years.
Yeah, of course.
And becomes ridiculous. It becomes so ridiculous. I stopped at that book. I think I was not willing to go on. Maybe someday, but I just couldn't devote any more of my brain space to it. Cause it was just so unenduring and uninteresting. It was like, he was just filling up pages.
Yeah. Well,
so
he was a machine that was feeding his family. I don't know where Frank. I think I'm confusing him with Arthur C. Clarke, who lived in Sri Lanka for the rest of his life after the Space Odyssey novels.
Wow.
But yeah, turns out if your whole if Dune is what pays the bills, you're gonna keep cranking out those Dune novels.
So anyway, I guess that's really all I had for the podcast.
Okay. Well, next week, it's all three of us with Pleasantville, I believe.
Okay.
Well, it shows on the calendar, Pleasantville.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Hey.